The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
This is the Fixer Sciatica Podcast.
So let's talk about migraines. Some of you are probably experiencing headaches. What is the difference between a headache and a migraine? We have these questions and trying to figure out how can we manage life, especially if you are dealing with a whole bunch of other issues, something like sciatica pain. And so today's guest, I had the opportunity to get connected via LinkedIn. We had some short but really insightful conversations via LinkedIn. And I'm a huge fan of the platform because it allows us to get connected with professionals, especially in a shared space. And so today I have Lindsay De Los Santos, who knows a lot about migraines and has a whole website dedicated to that. So Lindsay, it's so great to see you.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here.
The honor is all mine. This is something that I have come across briefly throughout my career. And I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to talk about migraines specifically because because it's something that often doesn't get discussed. And I also think that there are a lot of areas of migraines and headaches that often get overlooked. And it's definitely something that I see as a physical therapist, and I can talk a little bit more about cervicogenic headaches, but the whole migraine experience itself, I know that you've been through it and you've also been able to discuss it with a lot of patients. But before we get into the nitty gritty, tell us a little bit more about yourself and the journey to where you're at and what you're doing today.
Okay. Well, I'm really thankful for where I am today. And being able to be a patient advocate is a really great opportunity to help people in the migraine space. But it really was quite a path for me to get here, both on my own well-being and then also in just gaining the opportunity to do what I do today. So I've had migraine for over 30 years. And I remember my first migraine, well, what I remember is being 15 and impacting my life at that time. But my journey to get a diagnosis was 15 years long. I didn't get diagnosed with migraine until I was 30. And so I think just that access to care, and of course, it's been a while since I was 15. So we know more now than we know then, and also about children with migraine. But along the way, what delayed my diagnosis also is that I found out that I have epilepsy. And so it's very common for there to be a comorbidity with migraine. And so that's something that I also talk with people about, and sometimes really connecting yourself with the right doctors and healthcare providers is really important. So that piece of my journey helps me to relate to people who are trying to find that diagnosis and aren't sure how to navigate the healthcare. We need our doctors to talk to each other. And so as time progressed, my migraine became more severe. At first, it was the epilepsy we were worried about, but then migraine kind of took over. And so I was episodic for a while, having a few a month. And unfortunately, I transitioned to chronic. And so that impacted every area of my life. I had some very dark days. Prior to my second child, I remember I was on the floor because I had been to the bathroom so many times throwing up. And at that moment, I just thought, we have to find a better way. I'm going to have to give up on this life that I want to live. And fortunately, I was able to continue, and we did have our second child, but migraine continued to impact me. I continued to go from rescue medication to rescue medication that either worked for a while or didn't work. And that finally, I was in the hospital 1 year, 8 times. I was admitted 8 times for migraine. And so my husband and I said, this is not a life to live. This isn't a life. And so I knew I had to find a better way. And so that led me to a holistic approach. And so I've brought in a whole lot of other treatments that we can talk about, including physical therapy. I think that's a great piece. And a lot of people aren't directed to you. So I think that's really important to have that conversation. And that's why advocacy is so important to me. And I think there's so many people in the migraine space who feel hopeless. They feel that this is the life that they're not going to get better, or we just kind of have to deal with it. And I just want them to know that that is not true. You can live the life you want to live with migraine. And that's kind of this big passion of mine. So thank you for asking. I'm really excited to hopefully make a difference in the migraine space or to continue to work there.
you certainly have lived through the experience. You brought up your role as a patient advocate. Now, I have my own definition of a patient advocate, but I would love for you to share a little bit more about what being an advocate means to you, and how that can help patients or people dealing with migraines.
Okay, sure. Well, I think it's important to advocate for patients that we first have this common language and understanding of what migraine is and how it affects our lives, and then also what our treatment options. So I think the first piece is to have that shared knowledge, which I appreciate in my training. And then the other piece is really helping people be their own advocate, enabling them and empowering them to have the skills to navigate the healthcare system, to live the life they want to live, to talk to the people in their life, migraine at work, and then with your family. There's just so many pieces of this advocacy. And without advocating for yourself, you know, migraine can definitely take over your life.
Absolutely. I am in 100% agreement with you. As a healthcare provider, I see it from my end, but also from my patients, because I interact with patients every single day, and I actually have the opportunity to get really deep into the woods with them, because I'm working with them to actually be able to problem solve and figure some stuff out. And one of the things that I certainly notice in healthcare, especially, I mean, one, no one ever chooses to be in these problems to seek healthcare, right? Like, you go to healthcare, it's not because you want to, it's because you need to fix these problems. And so by the time you go see a physical therapist, see a physician, it's like you're going for their help. So they have all the knowledge. So they have all the power. And what ends up happening is that it can be very challenging, one, to just be able to share your experience and create a succinct enough story to share with your physician in 5 minutes, or be able to even just share it within the hour that you may or may not have with the physical therapist. And so it becomes very challenging on just one, being able to communicate the information, but also number two, it can also be extremely overwhelming when a doctor is giving you a diagnosis or a physical therapist is trying to help, or even any other practitioner. It's like it's information overload while you're already dealing with this pain from migraines. And so I'm really thankful for people like you who can actually turn a lot of that terminology into English, because I think a lot of people, whenever they get their diagnosis or get their information, they turn to Google or whatever search engine, like one of the newest ones is, or one of the trending ones is going on Reddit. And so you go on Reddit, you share your experience, but it's also really hard to communicate everything via typed or written language. So you're getting a whole bunch of other people's experience. And sometimes that can be really helpful, but then a lot of times it can be extremely overwhelming on top of the things that you're already acquiring. So being able to share the knowledge, but then I really loved how you said enable and empower them to navigate the healthcare system. Because I know for me, it's like I have a migraine, or I don't suffer from migraines, but if I had one, I wouldn't even know where to start, right? But before we get into just trying to navigate the healthcare system when you're dealing with migraines, for the audience who isn't quite familiar with what a migraine is, tell us a little bit more about what is a migraine.
Okay, sure. I think first I want to kind of define migraine itself as a neurological disease, this debilitating disease. And it's something that I know in my conversations, people can become confused about. And so realizing even one of my bosses was confused and thought, you know, well, gosh, you don't have that anymore because you got medicine. And so really understanding that this is a disease, there isn't a cure for it, but there are treatments for it. So there's definitely there's a lot of hope in that, but also just understanding that piece. And so then when we go into the migraine attack, this is the piece that unfortunately is a part of that migraine life. And we've learned a lot over time, I feel like, which has also helped us find the right treatments. When a person has a migraine attack, it could be the inflammation in their blood vessels and their nerves. We've kind of grown over time in what we think is causing that migraine. And then there are four stages. There's actually a fifth stage we can talk about as well that people can experience during a migraine, as well as many symptoms. So this migraine isn't really just a brain disease. It's really a whole body disease. It can affect everything. So that's, am I making sense?
You are. You're absolutely making sense. So let's talk a little bit more about, we have inflammation, blood inflammation of the blood vessels and nerves. Describe to us a little bit more about what like a migraine attack is. Because I think one, people just perceived migraines as, oh, it's just like a really bad, intense headache that like doesn't get any better. But there's certainly a lot more to that. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm so thankful for that question. Yes, I think there's a lot of confusion about that. And so, and in fact, I feel like I get asked this every day. So that's a great question. You know, migraine is so much more than head pain. It can definitely include head pain. And this, when you think of head pain, this is severe, debilitating pain. It's just excruciating. There can also be people that actually experience migraine without head pain. So when I first heard that, I thought, man, how is that possible? But with all the symptoms, nobody's lucky. There are so many other symptoms that are included that can be nausea, vomiting, extreme sensitivity to light, to sound, to smells. There can be some cognitive issues, putting your thoughts together, being able to communicate, which also makes migraine be something that can feel very scary. There's also, and we may talk about different types of migraine also, but that can present additional symptoms. So migraine is just, it is so much more than a headache. And that's why it's very complex and really important to address in that way.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit PTPatientAdvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm glad you broke it down. And absolutely. Well, and a little bit later in this conversation, we're going to talk about the types of migraines and a little bit more about like what those causes are. But let's talk about the diagnostic aspect. For you, you actually said that it took you 15 years for you to finally get diagnosed with migraines, which one, I can't imagine 15 years of just trying to work a problem out or even just try to figure out what you're having. So tell us a little bit more about what that diagnostic process is like.
Well, I think it's really important that you find yourself to getting into the office of a neurologist or a headache specialist that can really be knowledgeable about migraine and find out if it is actually what you have. You know, in working with other doctors, your primary care physicians can be wonderful people and serve so many purposes, but I've had many conversations with them, and they have talked about how their training in migraine is very minimal. It could be an hour. And so this person, you know, can be a team member of your healthcare providers, but that diagnosis piece really should come from a neurologist or a headache specialist. And in that, and there isn't like a blood test or something that you take and it says you have migraine, they're really looking at your symptoms, your patterns, you know, what is happening. And so that's where I also encourage people to take the time to keep a headache diary and kind of note that information. And then, you know, don't worry if you haven't done that. Your doctor can have that conversation with you, but it can be a resource not only for learning to manage your migraine attacks, but also to find out, is this even actually what I have going on? So that's a really great question.
Yeah, and it certainly brings up the importance, but also the role that primary care physicians have across our journey. Interesting. I don't know what the statistic is, but primary care, I mean, a lot of people don't have a primary care doctor. I actually just recently started working with mine. And so here I am in my 30s. I was like, I'm healthy. I don't need necessarily a primary care doctor, but it is important because what's cool about primary care doctors is that they kind of know a decent, like we'll say for headaches and migraines, they might have small training, but they know about it and they know that you probably would benefit from working with, say, a neurologist. Oftentimes it's like, oh, well, I have this headache that's not going away. And you go to Google and it's like, all right, well, Medscape or WebMD says I have cancer. It's like, oh my gosh, do I go to an oncologist, right? So rather than having to turn to the internet, being able to speak with your primary care doctor, the folks who are kind of around you, so then that way it prevents you from going down that rabbit hole. And in a way, when it comes to diagnosis, a lot of it is going to be kind of, I like to say kind of like an educated guess. It's like based on your information and based on the data that I've received, these are my suspicions. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I've seen this across other diagnoses as well. We just had an episode on the Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And for that condition, it was really a matter of, a process of elimination of saying like, okay, here are these like 30 things that it could be, but then with every single test, it starts to narrow it down a little bit more. Just based on what I'm hearing, it seems like that could be a scenario too, where it's like you have this, okay, we'll say like, you know, the typical symptom, it's like, okay, you have headaches. It's like, why would the headache be present? And then it's like, here are 30 things. And then as you keep this headache journal, it gives you a little bit more of an idea. It gives the neurologist a much better idea of what we're dealing with. And so I really appreciate you sharing that journey, because a lot of people are like, I don't know where to go. And I often say, like, luckily for me as a physical therapist, I have a pretty decent idea of where I should be going when I am dealing with various different issues, but I can only imagine what it's like for the lay person who's experiencing this pain and they're like, go to Dr. Google, go to my primary care doctor, or even if I don't even have a primary care doctor, or like, where do I go? Do I go to an urgent care? Which urgent care is like a completely different realm of medicine. Although, I mean, they're often, you know, you have an urgent care clinic, a primary care clinic, it's all that stuff. So let's go back to migraines. And oftentimes a lot of our preconceptions of migraines, it's like, oh, it's like a really intense headache, right? Mm-hmm. So can you share with us a little bit more? And I think you talked about it briefly before, but can you tell us a little bit more again, like what makes migraines different than like the typical headache that we might feel on occasion due to other things?
Yeah. You know, the difference with migraine and that typical headache is migraine is truly debilitating. It can stop you in your tracks. It can make you unable to function and do your daily activities. People may be confined to a room where you are trying to deal with all of those symptoms, you know, where you can't handle any light, any sound. You cannot work. You cannot take care of your family. It's not a nagging pain. It's a debilitating pain. And then all of those other symptoms with the nausea and the vomiting, you know, and all those light sensitivities that we were speaking about, and other sensitivities really impact your ability to do anything. And I think that's a really important thing for people to understand. But then the other piece of that is that you can't really always see what's going on with the person with migraine. And so, you know, you can say I'm in pain, or if someone has a headache, they can say I have a headache. But to really understand what's going on, you often can't even see all of those underlying things. And that's so important to talk about. I feel like that really keeps people, you know, from understanding what's happening and being able to move forward.
It's tough. Pain in general is quite invisible. Unlike a surgery where you know the person has a scar, or like the surgical site, you need to like keep that area clean. Something like diabetes or high blood pressure, you can actually assign those values a specific number. It's the best way for us to actually gauge the intensity or the impact of pain is actually through a subjective saying, this is what I'm feeling or this is what I'm experiencing. And it gets increasingly challenging for us to try to objectively record the human experience, because it is in fact an experience. And the best things that we can do from an objective measurement standpoint is we can use the VAS, the visual analog system, which is pretty much on a scale of 0 to 10. Tell me a little bit more about your pain. But I think I'm just based on what I'm hearing, I'm assuming that they also have some sort of functional scale to measure the intensity of the impact that migraines have on someone's life. Does that sound about right?
That's very accurate. Yeah, we definitely look at the pain scale, but then also how well are you able to do your daily activities? So there's really two pieces of that that are very important. And I think it's hard for people sometimes to navigate both those scales. And, you know, I remember once I was speaking with a nurse prior to my appointment, and she said, I'm pretty sure you're at a 10. And I said, for me, this is actually probably a 7. And she was really surprised. So also helping people be able to speak to what they're really feeling and going through can take time. So I think it's really important for people to ask questions and to really understand what
this is. The new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
that number means, because as you probably find, sometimes you may be guiding people or helping them understand where you actually add on this scale, because what a number 8 is to someone else could be completely different to another person. So there is that little challenge as well.
Yeah. And I think what ends up happening is that when we are not aware of people's perspective or experience in the pain that they're having, we can either push people way too far, or we don't push people far enough. And I think that this is where the importance of working with the correct provider and having clear communication, mm-hmm. to be able to say, this is helping or this isn't helping. And listeners, the reason why we try to objectify pain as much as possible is that it gives us an opportunity to actually understand, are we making, in fact, progress? So I haven't had the opportunity to take a look at the migraine measurement scale, but say, for example, we're looking at, it's like on a scale of 0 to 10, it's like 10 being completely able to and 0 being unable to. And it's like, all right, do my office test. And it's like, okay, if we're looking at, okay, pre-treatment, we're probably looking at like a 1 out of 10, like do my daily tasks, like pretty much being barely able to do it. And then we implement some sort of intervention. And then 6 weeks later, you go from like a 1 to a 3, although that's still not as capable as a 10, you can actually still see the positive change. And that's why it's important for us to try to use your actual individual experience and compare it amongst your own experience versus trying to find someone else's reference point. Because every person's different. And again, pain is an experience that we go through, and to be able to objectively measure it allows us to truly measure progress or lack of progress or the regression. Now, I think you were talking about that there could be different types of migraines, correct? Mm-hmm. And so different types of migraines, I'm under the assumption that with different types of migraines are often caused by different types of some sort of dysfunction. So can you tell us a little bit more about what the different types are and how they differ from each other?
Sure. I think the two you hear the most common are you might be classified as having migraine or migraine with aura. So we look at those two, and adding aura to your diagnosis really is only about 1/4 of the migraine population. So it isn't as common, but it's a really important thing to be aware of. And with the aura, you can have additional visual disturbances, some additional cognitive struggles. And so that piece is really important to be able to communicate with your doctor about, and to identify where in this do I seek which treatment, you know. And so that migraine with and without aura also affects the kind of medication that you can take. And so it's kind of what you're born with. So what you have, you know, or what brought on that migraine. So I don't know that I've been shared with a specific cause for whether or not you have the aura, but those are two differences in migraine. There's also menstrual migraine and then hemiplegic migraine. And so those can be, obviously, would be tailored to the person and their triggers and their symptoms a little bit more. So that would be something that would kind of fall under the umbrella of those types of migraine. Another one that we should address really is the person who is episodic or the person who is chronic. And so that also changes your navigation for your treatment plan also. So I think people sometimes have, it's very easy to misunderstand that. And, you know, episodic could mean a couple a year. It could mean a few a month. Chronic, you're looking at 15 or more headache days a month. And so that really is, again, where that debilitating piece continues to happen. So, you know, that's also why having those conversations is really important, because by someone saying, I have migraine, there is so much below the surface. You know, that doesn't even begin to tell you what's really going on. So understanding those types and how each can impact your life is really important.
Yeah, that's so fascinating. And thank you so much for sharing those various different types, because when you have this, when you can categorize specific subsets of these migraines, it can help actually pinpoint some of the more effective treatments, I'm mm-hmm. assuming. And so if you're having, say, I think you said a menstrual migraine, that's going to be very different than like a migraine that isn't involved with the menstrual cycle, right? And so would it be safe to assume that the treatment approach would probably be a little different between those two?
It could be, yes. It could affect, and I know for myself, that was something, an issue I was having. I actually have 8 different triggers, so that didn't end the migraine challenge for me, but that's a time where they can target actually your cycle, and they can work with a woman to hopefully minimize those attacks that you're having. And so that is, I think, hopeful, because we don't always have control of our hormones, but our healthcare providers can do things to help improve the frequency of those migraine attacks.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about those triggers. You just noted that you have 8 different triggers. So question number one is, what are triggers? And then also number two is a 2-part question. The second part of the question is, are all migraines associated with some sort of trigger?
Okay, those are great questions. I think it's important to note the difference between a cause and a trigger, because sometimes that's where people feel some migraine guilt for getting a migraine attack. And so, you know, the cause for your migraine attacks is you have this neurological disease. That is the reason that you're having these migraine attacks. But a trigger, or compounding the triggers, can make you more prone to get an attack. And so some of those different triggers could include lack of sleep, too much sleep. Stress is a big trigger. We talked about hormones. In addition to those things, it can be skipping meals. I've even had allergies provoke a migraine attack. So there's so many different triggers, and also bright lights, flashing lights. The list is very long, which also helps see the difference between headache and migraine. We didn't address that in that conversation point, but I think it's important to note that's also a big difference between migraine and another headache. There's so many different things involved. And then I want to make sure, you might have to restate the second part of your question. You did ask, I'm sorry, you asked me something else about that.
Yeah, too. No, it's okay. This is really great. Very eye-opening for me. But the second part of that question is, are all migraines associated with some sort of trigger?
Oh, okay. That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked that, because all these triggers, I have tried to find, you know, different things that will combat that or prevent that. And I remember speaking to a neurologist, and I said, but I did all the things. I even limited my caffeine. And I used to tease him that he was Dr. Caffeine to me, because I loved my coffee. And I said, so I don't understand. And he said, Lindsay, the deal is, you have migraine. So you can do everything right. We can, you know, we can address all these triggers, but you're still potentially going to have an attack because you have migraine. So I think that's a really important question, and that's something that a lot of people don't realize. And so that can relieve some of that guilt a little bit also, and understanding that this is just a part of my life, you know?
Yeah. So it seems like the cause is kind of like out of your control. Triggers is something that you can somewhat control and be able to handle, but you're right. Like, you can do all the right things, but if you have migraines, then even the slightest bit could actually lead into the tipping point of having you go through a migraine episode. And so I really appreciate you sharing with that, because what I find, especially on the orthopedic side, I work with patients who have migraines, and even just like in pain management itself, one of the key pieces for us as physical therapists is to identify what are the triggers. And it's our jobs as physical therapists to be able to, one, identify and figure out what those triggers are, but then also modify your lifestyle or how you move to avoid those triggers altogether. Mm-hmm. Or in some cases, depending on who you're working with, is also building up your resiliency to be able to handle a little bit more of those triggers before an episode does come on. Which then actually brings us to the next question is, there's been some increasing research out there that's been talking about how exercise can actually be helpful for migraines. And I know that exercise is like a very general term. What are some forms of exercise that you found to be helpful when it comes to managing migraines?
You know, over time, that has really changed for me. I have been a very passionate or just an avid runner. And so for someone with migraine, running can be a challenge. And that can be from pounding the pavement to just the consistency of feeling like you're able to run. And so over time, I found that I didn't have to give up on running, but I found some new loves. And so those things for me have included yoga has been a great tool for me. It's a great stress reliever. And, you know, when you talk about kind of preparing yourself or helping your resiliency piece, I feel like yoga can do that for you. And it also still promotes so many different pieces that are beneficial of exercise. So yoga, I think, is a great option for people. And I think it's also important, the big piece when we talk about exercise, whether you're doing yoga or strength training or running, is just listening to your body. I don't think anything has to be off the table for somebody with migraine. But I think it is important to listen to your body. And typically, if you're going to push through an exercise, that's not the way to do it with migraine. So listen to your body. If you need a healing day, a rest day, take the day. But exercise is so good for migraine and just your overall well-being. So that's a really important topic to discuss, and probably something you're really familiar with as a physical therapist. So.
Absolutely. I hear this term a lot. Listen to your body, especially when you're with people dealing with migraines, people dealing with pain, back pain, sciatica, knee pain, anything like that. A lot of times we're like, oh, you got to listen to your body. So this is a question that I didn't send to you before this interview, but what does listening to your body mean?
Well, I think listening to my body means if I am experiencing pain, then I've got to listen to that. And honestly, as a person who has loved to run, I have loved to do strength training, I'm very tempted to just finish this mile or finish this set, you know, and unfortunately that backfires every time. So pain is something that we have to listen to. And, you know, there's different kinds of pain. There's that good sore pain, if you know you've worked out, but if you are experiencing pain, you really have to take a step back because it can be a bigger setback for you. So I think that's important. Also, if I am doing an exercise and I'm feeling some of those symptoms that I might feel before head pain, if I'm starting to feel, if I have any dizziness, or if I'm, you know, am developing any nausea or just a twinge of pain, then I have to listen to that. And so I think it's important to pay attention, you know, really closely to all of those things. And I probably learned that the hard way.
You know, what's interesting is that most people look at exercise as a way to just clear their head. So they kind of turn it into an outer body experience. They kind of, they go for the run or they're doing the yoga and they kind of just check out. I used to own a fitness facility. And what I would say is when you walk in through the door, all of your life's troubles are going to be left at the door. Mm. But what that also meant to some people was the fact that you can kind of just check out and just like, just do the exercise and just go. Although in some cases, like it's a great stress reliever. Really what should be important is that once you walk into the gym or once you start running or once you start doing any of these physical activities, I often challenge my clients to have an inner body experience. So what that means is you go in, you're doing your yoga class, and as you're moving around, ask yourself, what am I feeling in these positions? Is this comfortable? Is this uncomfortable? What I find is not only are we looking at, okay, is the activity itself irritating or causing some of these triggers? Not only is that, but also how am I doing these things as well? Because and I love the fact that you enjoy running, because a lot of people used to think like, oh, well, I'm just going to go out for a jog. And I remember my early days of physical therapy where someone would come in with pain and I would get their pain down and it's like, okay, you can go back to running. And then they would run. All of a sudden they're like, I'm in more pain. So then it started making me ask, well, what is happening? Why can't they go back into running pain free? And then made me start thinking about, all right, well, how are they running? And then allows us to, again, have that inner body experience to be able to say, all right, well, if I'm going to be running, I should be focusing on X, Y, and Z. And just a quick little story. I was an endurance athlete in college. And that meant my races were like 5 to 15 minutes in length. And oftentimes people would say, Ashley, you're like such a tough person and you're such pain during that race. And some other folks would be like, oh, you know what? I kind of just like turned my brain off and went and just like finished the race. I recognized that it was painful the entire time. And what got me through those races was me asking the question, how can I get this race done with less pain? So I focus a little bit more on my mechanics and my form. I was able to finish the race with the same amount of pain, but I found that that allowed me to really understand my body and how I was able to recover from training or even practices. And it allowed me to stay healthy and be in the sport for a longer period of time, which really alludes to listening to your body. So I appreciate you sharing that with us and sharing your experience with us as well. So the key is to be able to understand that you're not alone in this journey. And the navigating the healthcare system is overwhelming. There's so many different physicians, so many different physical therapists. You go on every website and they're like, oh, we treat X, Y, and Z conditions. And it's like migraine. It's like, it's this big piece. And it can be overwhelming, very scary. And so you, as an advocate, can actually help people navigate the system. So for the listeners out there who are thinking, all right, I think I am dealing with some sort of migraine. I'm having these headaches, or I'm having these things that my primary care doctor hasn't told me that I should get looked at, or maybe my doctor said I'm dealing with some sort of migraine. I don't know where to turn to. You help people navigate that as a patient. So tell us a little bit more about the work that you do and what's the best way for people to get in touch with you.
Thanks for asking that too. You know, I spend some time talking to people, whether it is through email or it is through working with them individually. And so I think a big piece of that is also helping them to be able to share their migraine story. How can you share with your provider that this is impacting your life? And so sharing that story and developing that story is really important. And then also just looking at how migraine can affect every area of your life. So that's just a personal piece of what I do, with also just providing resources to people, so that when we're trying to find those answers, like we talk about, not in medical terms, but in something that we can understand, that's part of why I built migraineroad.com. And then that, out of that has grown just a much deeper relationship working in the migraine community. So I've worked with Miles for Migraine and the American Migraine Foundation, but now I'm getting ready to roll out a migraine course through this terminology that people can understand, with helping to navigate all the things that we've been talking about, and then also add some additional coaching services. So if people would like to get in touch with me, migraineroad.com would be the best place to go. You can communicate with me there, sign up for my newsletter, find out what else is going on, and find a lot of what we talked about there also. So I would love to help anyone, because I truly understand how this disease can impact your life. And so it is my mission to help others live the life that they want to live. So thank you for asking.
Absolutely. I love that. Listeners, if you didn't get a chance to write that down, I'm going to go ahead and put the link into the show notes. And I know that I'm going to be referring people over to you, because although I can do the orthopedic side, there's certainly a lot of things that I cannot do. And I myself am also confused and trying to navigate where patients should go, aside from my local network. And so I'm really thankful for the work that you're doing. And I appreciate the time that you took out of your day to share your knowledge, and especially from a migraine standpoint. So thank you so much. And listeners, if you want to get in touch with Lindsay, you'll go ahead and find her info out in the show notes. Lindsay, thank you so much for being on today's episode.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me and for the work that you do. This was an honor.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day. No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.
Quality proteins aren't just for special occasions. With Omaha Steaks, you get unbeatable flavor and value delivered right to your door. They have an unmatched selection of perfectly portioned proteins, including USDA certified tender steaks, burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and more. All flash frozen at their moment of peak quality, then quickly delivered to your door in a dependable cooler. So a great dinner is just minutes away. From Taco Tuesday to a weekend feast,
Omaha Steaks practically invented meat delivery, and they've been perfecting the art of premium proteins for over 100 years. With their 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can order with complete confidence. Taste the Omaha Steaks difference, a better, more convenient way to buy proteins. Start getting flavorful proteins delivered today. Visit omahasteaks.com and get $35 off with promo code AUDIO at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code AUDIO. Terms apply. See site for details.